Hello and welcome to episode 502 of Columbia Calling. I'm Emily Hart, and this week we are exploring Columbia's underground and invisible networks, as well as some of its strangest and least understood living creatures. Today's podcast is all about Colombian fungi. There are an estimated 300,000 species of fungi in Colombia, the huge majority of which have never been studied by science. In fact, fungi in general remain one of the greater mysteries of nature, and their study is considered to be a neglected mega-science. Many fungi are too small to see with the naked eye, and until only recently, they were considered to be a part of the plant kingdom, though it's now considered they're actually much closer to animals than they are to plants. Nevertheless, they are key to the past, present, and future of the entire planet. Fungi have played a vital role in shaping the Earth's biosphere and have directly impacted human society and its cultural evolution for the past 300,000 years as food, for rituals, or as medicine. They're capable of changing animal behavior, connecting the forests, feeding humans and animals, and they may even be a key weapon in the fight against climate change. Battling the still vast gap in knowledge is the Useful Plants and Fungi of Colombia project, an initiative led by the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew in London, in collaboration with the Humboldt Institute here in Colombia. The project aims to increase, consolidate, and make accessible knowledge of the country's useful plants and fungi for the benefit of local communities. Today, I am chatting to two of Colombia's top scientists and leaders in this field who worked on that project. Mycologist Aida Vasco is assistant professor at the School of Microbiology at the University of Antioquia and co-chair of the Colombian Association of Mycology. Botanist Mauricio Díaz-Granados is chief science officer and dean of the International Plant Science Center at the New York Botanical Garden. Mauricio led the Useful Plants and Fungi of Colombia project, including the development of the Col Fungi portal and the Catalogue of Fungi of Colombia. In Colombia, fungi are primarily used as nutrition in the form of wild edible mushrooms. They have long played a role in the food security of indigenous people and rural communities. Representations of mushrooms have also been found in the iconography of several pre-Hispanic cultures throughout the country, showing knowledge and a close cultural relationship with mushrooms. Shamanic and spiritual uses are also common in the country. But habitat loss and fragmentation, overuse of pesticides and fungicides, and of course climate change affect fungi as well as flora and fauna. Fungi are too often neglected when it comes to biodiversity legislation and conservation in Colombia and further afield. The Colombian government only recognizes three components of biological diversity: fauna, flora, and microorganisms. But there is cause for hope. We are only just starting to understand fungi, but the field is gaining momentum and enthusiasm. Experiments show their potential is even grander than we may have imagined. They are not only a sustainable food source to fight hunger and replace the industrial food which accelerates climate change, mushrooms can also decompose waste, including even nappies and cigarette butts. They can also be used in mycofabrication, in architecture, or even manufacture of furniture. They are incredibly adaptive, and they provide ways for plants and animals to survive even in extreme and degraded environments. So today we are going to be talking about zombie fungi, shamanic fungi and magic mushrooms, the wood wide web, sunscreen spores, makeup fungi and eco-warrior fungi. Plus, why this fascinating mega-science has been so neglected and why it's more urgent than ever that mycology gets the awareness, resources, and respect that it deserves. All that to come, but first, your headlines for this week.
The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
The third round of peace talks between the government and FARC dissident group, the Estado Mayor Central, has come to an official close in Bogotá this week, with the signing of a fifth agreement, ratifying the extension of the ceasefire and outlining the ongoing agenda, as well as reaffirming the commitment to stop kidnapping, implement humanitarian measures, and incorporate citizen participation into the negotiations. The peace process with guerrilla group the Ejército de Liberación Nacional also continues. President Gustavo Petro met with Pope Francis this week on the issue of peace and proposed the Vatican as a host for an upcoming round of talks with the group. Negotiations have, from the outset, been backed by both the United Nations and the Catholic Church. Colombia's homicide rate dropped by 1% in 2023, according to the Ministry of Defense. The indicator remains, however, comparatively high at 26 homicides per 100,000 inhabitants, among the top 20 national murder rates globally. 40% of the year's 13,500 murders occurred in fights, 25% in confrontations between armed groups, and 15% during muggings. Massacres, meanwhile, increased by 8% during the year. Three signatories to the 2016 peace deal with the FARC have been murdered so far this month, along with 11 social leaders and six massacres, according to group Indepaz. Additionally, the Pacific region has registered 3,000 people displaced by conflict and violence so far this year, as well as around 10,000 confined to their localities by violence. President Gustavo Petro arrives this week in the region to discuss and plan policy. The landslide, which killed 39 people and injured a further 20 in Chocó in mid-January, continues to affect the country. This week, Vice President Francia Márquez arrived to attend a mass for the victims of the disaster on the road between Medellín, Antioquia, and Quibdó, Chocó. The road, known as the Death Track, has seen numerous accidents, closures, and consequent demonstrations from the local population, often protesting corruption and theft of resources supposedly destined for infrastructure. The government has now promised new investment, but according to the Colombian Geological Service, landslides have cost the country more than $100 million since 1995. Russian President Vladimir Putin sent a letter of condolence to Chocó this week, saying he shares the grief of the families who have lost loved ones. This has come as something of a surprise, not least given the strained diplomatic relations between Russia and Colombia following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The heavy rains which led to the landslide are part of El Niño, a weather phenomenon with various affectations in Colombia, currently causing disasters in other parts of the country. Colombia has recorded 143 forest fires so far this year, particularly serious in the department of Santander. There are also severe water supply issues in municipalities across Colombia. The Pacto Histórico, the broad government coalition, may become a single political party, according to the president. Under current law, the group cannot rerun as a coalition in the 2026 election, so Petro says he plans to form a united party, in his own words, to win the 2026 elections and to make the democratic transformation of Colombia irreversible. Smaller political parties within the coalition have expressed resistance and concern. Meanwhile, a right-wing councillor from Medellín has had to offer a public apology after he posted on X, formerly Twitter, a viral video of the president in which he appears to be drunk while speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland. The video is a fake and has been manipulated and slowed. New mayor of Medellín, Federico Gutiérrez, has announced fines for anyone caught using drugs on the street of the city. A new decree provides for economic sanctions for use of psychoactive substances, including small doses, in any public space exposed to minors. The decree also gives wide discretion for the police, particularly when it comes to the size of fines. Two of Colombia's most controversial and emblematic women, each associated with armed groups on opposing sides of the political spectrum, have died this month: Piedad Córdoba and Enilce López, known as La Gata. Piedad Córdoba, who died of a heart attack this weekend, was an Afro-Colombian Antioquian senator for the ruling Pacto Histórico coalition. She was a longtime liberal politician working on peace processes and hostage releases with the FARC guerrilla group. She repeatedly stood accused of collaboration with the FARC and of over-closeness with Hugo Chavez, then president of Venezuela. She was removed from her post and disqualified from holding public office for 18 years in 2010, then overturned by the Council of State in 2016, despite ongoing controversies around her links to Alex Saab and the activities of her brother, who pled guilty to drug trafficking charges in the US earlier this year. Days before the second round of presidential elections, she was detained in Honduras for transporting an undeclared $68,000 in cash. Petro himself asked her to withdraw from his campaign, though she claimed it was political persecution. Francia Márquez, meanwhile, has called her a woman who opened the doors of Colombian politics to Afro-descendant women and who fought tirelessly for peace and social justice in our country. Enilce López, alias La Gata, was a businesswoman who financed former President Álvaro Uribe's campaigns and was linked to paramilitarism. She was ultimately convicted of murder, for which she was serving her sentence when she died in Barranquilla this week. She began her career reading tarot cards in Magangay, Bolívar, then began a successful gambling company before gaining close links to regional political structures and later being linked to money laundering for the paramilitary group Autodefensas Unidas de Colombia. Her sons have also entered politics. Jorge Luis was removed from office and later sentenced to the same murder that she was, of journalist Rafael Prince. The court is currently prosecuting another son, former Senator Hector Julio, for links to paramilitaries. Her youngest son, Jose Julio, is being prosecuted for money laundering, illicit enrichment, and conspiracy to commit crimes. Those were your headlines for this week. Let's get into the episode. So, hello and welcome, Mauricio and Aida. Thank you so much for being here. Let's start at the very beginning. And I know the American pronunciation is fungi, but I grew up in Wandsworth, London, so we're going to be calling it fungi today. Are their own kingdom. So they're not a plant and they're not an animal. They're their own thing completely. I've read that there are potentially as many as 10 times more species of fungi than of plants. It's a huge universe. And a lot of us, I think, grew up thinking that mushrooms are the same as fungi, but they're not, are they?
So mushrooms is a type of fungi. It's just one special group. But most of the fungi are microscopic, and that's why they are very difficult to study them and to know the real diversity. But the mushrooms are usually these big, they form these big structures that it can be easily see in the naked eye. We call it macrofungi.
Why is this part of biology so historically overlooked?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think that mostly because it's a group that is difficult to study, because most of them are microscopic, and also because for a long time, fungi were considered plants. Now, we know that it's a different kingdom, and that it's very diverse, very important for the ecosystem to survive for the planet. And now the people is trying to give them a little bit more importance. But for a long time, it was just part of the botany. And I think that it was like a minor sister or something like that. So, yeah.
So both of you have worked on the Useful Plants and Fungi of Colombia project. But how did both of you end up working on and around this issue? What drew you here?
In 2019, I started, when I was a research leader at the Royal Botanic Gardens Kew, I started creating a project proposal to investigate the wealth of useful plants in Colombia. So if you consider that Colombia hosts almost 10% of the planet's biodiversity and is considered a mega diverse country, it would be a great opportunity from the UK in collaboration with Colombia, many other institutions, even other countries. It was a great opportunity for us to investigate the useful flora. But it was also an astonishing opportunity to expand our reach to the fungi and investigate and work with our mycological colleagues from Colombia and other countries to compile all the information about fungi. So with them, we launched this project called the Useful Plants and Fungi of Colombia Project, which was an almost three-year long project, which involved 119 researchers from 25 institutions and various countries. And together with AIDA and many other mycologists, we decided to compile all the information that was available in different sources on fungi or fungi for the country in a portal that we call called Fungi.
Even though in my university, I studied in Bogota, it was not a course in mycology. But I really fell in love with this group because it was very interesting, and also because in that moment, I wanted to also work a little bit in ethnobiology. This group was also very important for the indigenous people in the Amazon. That's why I started with working in ethnomycology in the Amazon region in Colombia. But I discovered also that fungi are a very diverse group. And also in the way, I have been collaborating with different colleagues. So when the project started in 2019, it was like a nice moment. Like we were like researching for more than 20 years, plus all the information that has been developing for other researchers. And this project came up and we decided as a community, a mycological community, to be part of that. And for now, for us, it's like a baseline. It was the opportunity to put all the information together to see what has been done and to know now where to go.
I love it, not least because, from what I understand, collaboration is very much in the nature of fungi, if not sort of one of their major characteristics, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All kinds of fascinating alliances and combinations that we'll be getting into later. And as you say, Mauricio, Colombia is considered the second most biodiverse country in the world. And it's got 26,000 or more plant species, including 6,000 with reported uses. And the fungal diversity could be equally high, but many remain undiscovered.
Well, actually, the fungal diversity is not equally high. It's much higher than that. So in very well-known countries where they have carried out inventories for decades and they have a huge advantage, we know that the diversity of fungi is at least 10 times higher than the plants. Mm-hmm. Which means that for a country, Colombia has more or less approximately 30,000 species. What you said is correct, 26,000 known species.
Right.
But if we estimate a few thousand species that are still new to be discovered to science, we can round the number of about 30,000 species. And if we use the same rate that is being used for very well-known countries, that means that Colombia could have at least 300,000 species of fungi, which is huge. And of that diversity, with the project and with the, as Aida was mentioning, with the help of all the work that the mycological community has done in the country for many, many years, we managed to compile information about 7,000 over 7,200 species. So that's what we know. So the work that the mycologists have to do in Colombia seems to be endless.
Mm-hmm. It's
huge. We need more mycologists.
More mycologists, and I'm guessing more resources. If this has been such an overlooked area of science up to now, I can imagine that it's a struggle to make space in the funding world as well as in the in the informational world.
Yeah, exactly. We have overlooked fungi, a combined effect of lack of education, money, time, and lack of support for research. Even like, and if you see out there, usually everywhere, you see the description of a national park, and you see this is the flora and this is the fauna. That's it. And where is the fungi? So we have sanctuaries of flora and fauna, but not fungi. What happens with the fungi? So there's still this conception that Aida was mentioning, that fungi or fungi are plants, are associated with plants. And that is interesting because fungi are more related to animals, as Aida knows very well, than to plants. However, traditionally, we've been studying fungi in botanical gardens. So it should be the responsibility almost of zoos.
I love it. I would go.
Yeah, actually, I think it would be a fantastic attraction to go to a place where you could see and admire all the diversity of fungi in all the forms and shapes. But also, Aida was mentioning about how difficult really to study them well. You require access to world-class technology, including molecular, and that's very expensive. And in some countries, particularly the most diverse countries in the world, there's always a limitation to access those facilities and technologies that are very expensive. We are very young as a scientific community in the study of fungi compared to other areas, because most of these are not visible to our eyes. The mycological community is still, in countries like Colombia, small compared to the botanical community or other communities. Even though we predict that the diversity of fungi is many times larger than the diversity of plants.
There's a sense of not quite fear, but something near fear towards mushrooms. We've had, in the last 2 years, quite a lot of horror films. For example, the zombie series The Last of Us has a very specific fungal element, which is what people have caught, and that's why they've become zombies. And a terrifying one about mycorrhizal networks in forests, and about a forest that becomes conscious because of these fungal networks and sort of attacks people. Now, I wonder if that's a kind of stigma that you guys have come across, just a lack of understanding that leads to some degree of fear around fungi?
Yes. But I think that this kind of, like this series, that television show, they open at least to the public the idea that the fungus are in nature and they can be interesting. So after after The Last of Us, they have been many interviews and manuscripts and information about fungi. And I think that, okay, in the beginning the people was afraid and they wanted to know maybe there's the zombie, the fungi that cause zombie ants can be jump to the humans. So the specialists could teach the people that it was not possible, about the biology of this special type of fungi, what are the fungi, what are their roles in nature. So I think that, okay, it was not a positive message, but they open at least to the public the idea that the fungi are in nature and they can be also like interesting. And something similar with the Fantastic Fungi. It was in Netflix and many people start watching it and start to ask about fungi.
There is an opening in pop science in the book world as well. The recent Robert McFarlane Underlands book has a whole chapter about fungi, which is an incredible book for anyone who hasn't read it, and Entangled Life by Merlin Sheldrake. But I did want to go back to this particular group called, in pop science, zombie fungi. And there are 89 different species of this fungi in Colombia, which is, I understand, quite an unusually high number. So why are they called zombie fungus? What is it they're doing? What are they up to?
The fungus, they are modifying the nervous system and also the muscles. They make the ants go up in a tree and they bite a piece of liverwood or another plant. And there they cannot move their mandible anymore, so they just stay there, and then the ant die, and the fungus form the sexual structure and disperse the spores.
It's so fascinating. And I read in Entangled Life that some of the tiny marks that ants leave on the underside of leaves when they're clamping on have been found in fossils that are tens of millions of years old.
Yeah.
Age old. And like you say, they specialize in specific animals. I think there's one that invades a cicada and rots its back half, but then also gives the cicada some kind of sort of energetic chemical. So the thing is still flying around, just flinging spores around out of its back half, which is rotting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is partly why maybe some people have a sort of slight fear of fungi. <Yeah. laughs> This is an extraordinary thing for you know, something that we do not consider intelligent in the way that we are. The sophistication of this mechanism is extreme, right?
This idea that fungi are dangerous and they are like far away from us is wrong, because fungi are almost everywhere. And they live on us. They are in our bodies, in our gut, on our skin, in our hairs, forming part of our microbiomes. We eat them. The food that we eat relies on them. We breathe them. We walk on them. They are on the ground. They are almost in every ecosystem. So this idea that fungi are a way, that they are there, that they are dangerous, should not be kept, because we rely on them. All life relies on fungi.
And I think that brings us perfectly into the Col Fungi project, because as well as having these fascinating, idiosyncratic, questionably slightly grotesque interactions with nature, like you say, they are not only everywhere, but absolutely crucial to us. And this is a project which has compiled not only an incredible feat of information, but also can be organized by uses, both to us and in the monitoring of ecosystems, etc. So how did this project come about?
So as with plants, there was a problem before of having information, having lots of publications, but dispersed in various sources, some of those sources inaccessible or largely inaccessible. And it's when the information is not centralized, it's not organized, etc., it becomes a challenge even for researchers, but also for communities and for society, in order to be able to use this information to provide solutions for the challenges that we are facing. So we proposed creating a portal to bring together all this information in through this online resource. The website is www.colfungi.org, and it's an authoritative, expert-driven, open access online portal with all the information for Colombian fungi and their uses. So, as I said, similar to Col Fungi, but it basically allows to search as you would do it with Google about pretty much anything, from a location like a municipality or a department in Colombia, a use, a species, or any trait. Like you can say edible, and then you will bring together all the fungi that have been identified as edible. Or you can say Antioquia, and then you will find all the species of fungi that have been linked to are known to be present in Antioquia. It's an aggregator of resources, so it shows from which source the information is being pulled out, and it refers to the source. So if you want more information, you can visit the source. That could be a publication of Aida or Tatiana. We decided to create a hard copy of the portal that is the Catalog of Fungi of Colombia, trying to summarize all the information, but also in the catalog, we invited about 30 researchers, more or less, from 22 institutions to summarize their knowledge in 16 chapters. So at the beginning of the checklist with all the fungi for Colombia, we have 16 chapters addressing different topics, from medicinal fungi, the implications for the biotechnology industry, all the way to useful fungi and their uses in the indigenous communities in the country, or the conservation status of the knowledge of the fungi in Colombia. And then we have the checklist with the QR codes linking to the live species profiles in the Cold Fungi portal. We have all the list of names, including synonyms, doubtful names, etc. And we managed to present also for the first time images, photographs for 500 species of fungi of Colombia. So this is freely available online. So if you just type on Google catalog of fungi of Colombia, you will be able to find the PDF and then download it and read it.
It's an incredible resource, and to have it free online for everybody. Links to this collaborative thing that I mentioned earlier that I want to go into a bit now. I just want to read this quote from Alexander von Humboldt, who spent a lot of time in Colombia. Gradually, the observer realizes that these organisms are connected to each other, not linearly, but in a net-like entangled fabric. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really interesting, not just about ecology generally and the way that we interact, but the literal nets that fungi create underground and the way that they interact with other species. Plants themselves came out of the sea as algae, and were only able to do that with the help of fungi. They didn't have roots. They had to use hyphae, which are sort of long fibrous structures which create webs as sort of pseudo roots until they were able to evolve their own. So the whole history of fungi, you know, way, way, way back, is incredibly collaborative and, I think you said, open source, freely available. I did want to talk quickly, Mauricio, given that you're a botanist, about this relationship between plants and fungi. Is it true that 90% of plants still depend on their relationships with fungi?
Yes, absolutely. That's true. And that means that plants are connected to these fungi. Fungi are incredibly important for plants, for growing faster, better, stronger, for absorbing the nutrients. But also, there's fungi that are going to be in charge of decomposing the plants and recycling the nutrients and bringing them back into the food chain as well. So they are the main recyclers and decomposers of ecosystems. But fungi allows plants to connect, to send messages to each other. So this is like an underground internet supporting plants and forests. So without fungi, plants wouldn't be able to survive in the long term. And that's why we are starting to call fungi our climate warriors also, because if we want to fight effectively against climate change, we need to have healthy soil full of these fungi that create this network and that will allow us to keep forest healthy.
The fungi are not only helping the plant to absorb nutrients, but also connecting the plants and helping them in the dry season, in the stress, when there are some stresses. And that's why they are very important for climate change. I think that thanks to the plant, to the fungi, the plants could move from the aquatic systems to the terrestrial systems. And now maybe they can survive in a climate change thanks to this relationship as well.
The network that you mentioned, Mauricio, about the sort of internet that goes on underneath the forest floor of these mycorrhizal fibers, which connect. And some of them have been shown to carry electrical impulses, almost like neurons in animal brains. I read a study where they'd actually implanted a hypha in the brain, I think either of an animal or an insect, and it was able to carry electrical impulses in a brain, not at the same speed that an animal brain would do. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 times slower. But it's interesting what you're saying about them being closer to animals than to plants. I think also interesting, they have an enormous role in human development and a lot of uses. And I know, Ida, you've studied particularly in Colombia the relationships that indigenous groups have with these mushrooms.
Yeah, it has been very interesting because in the beginning we had the idea that most of these indigenous and farm groups, the humans groups in Colombia, they were mycophobics. What does this mean? That they really don't like mushrooms, that maybe they hate them, so they have a negative relationship with them, but it is not true. It's because nobody was studied under that relationship. So now that we have been working with indigenous in the Amazon, but also in some Andean mountain areas in the south, we realized that those groups, they have been using mushrooms for a long time, mainly edible mushrooms, they're very important for feeding, but also medicinal ones. And in some cases, also ones more cultural or with shamanic uses. So the relation with the mushrooms is not only about uses. They have also mythological knowledge. They know about ecology. They have taxonomy with names, special names for the special species. In Colombia, there are around 100 indigenous groups. They all use these resources from nature, the same way that they use animals for as a food or plants. They also use the fungal resources that they could find in the forest, and they have a very like a strange relationship with these type of organisms. And for example, in Boyacá, it's amazing because the farmers, they use also mushrooms from the forest. There are not only the indigenous people. So the farmers in Boyacá and in the south of Santander, they use around 30 species of mushrooms as edible. This is a lot. This is a lot. This is a very important resource of food for them.
It's fascinating because they're very high in protein.
High in protein. Now, with the Objetivos de Desarrollo Sostenible,
Sustainable Development.
Yeah, we are talking about healthy food for the people to have healthy environments. You can have all those goals using mushrooms. So they have too many uses, and also for feeding people. That here in Colombia, we have too many problems with poverty. Mushrooms is a very good opportunity because they have many amino acids, proteins.
Meat substitutes, fungus are also important. You also mentioned shamanic uses, and I think the mushrooms which get people most excited are the ones we call magic mushrooms, which are, of course, common in Colombia. And you said there is an ancestral spiritual use of those in Colombian indigenous groups.
When we start to see the relation between the indigenous groups and mushrooms, in the pre-Hispanic history, we found some pieces of gold that they can show some shamanic uses of fungi. In the Gold Museum in Bogota, there are some pectorals in gold that they show like some shamans in a trance. And some of the figures have been interpreted as fungus.
Wow.
Maybe psilocybin. For many, many times, these shapes do not have any explanation. But now, thanks to the study of people like Schultes and Gaston Guzman, they realize that they look like psilocybes and that there are those of these magic mushrooms, so they can be interpreted like that. Also in the Amazon, when I was compilating the mythology, in one of the myths, they said that one shaman used to use psilocybe to talk with the ancestors. So I think that there are some symbols in the mythology you can trace that they used to use psilocybe to answer some magic fungi or magic mushrooms.
How fascinating. I'll have to go back to the Gold Museum and have a look for the breastplate. That's such a cool detail. And of course, difficult to talk about mushrooms without mentioning Terence McKenna, who's kind of the great prophet of psychedelic benefits and uses. And he spent quite a lot of time in Colombia. And I'm wondering where you guys stand on his particular version of the stoned ape hypothesis as relating to mushrooms, which is the idea that it was by eating mushrooms that Homo sapiens developed or encountered within themselves language, ritual, self-consciousness.
I think that it could be, you know. Now, at least the biological explanation that the people is that the psilocybin is very similar to the serotonin, the molecule. So this molecule helps connecting the axons in the brain. So the communication inside is faster and in different pathways. And that's why you are more sensitive to sounds, to smells. So maybe these connections or the use of these kind of emotions in the past makes the brain, our brain, more developed, maybe, with another extra connections in a like brilliant brain that we the humans have now. I think that it could be true, but let's see with the research in this area. It's very sad, Emily, because the psilocybin is important for the brain. It was prohibited in the 1950. The government decided to prohibit it in the States, but also in many, many countries. And the research in psychology and psychiatric and maybe the brain connections stopped for 70 years already. So it's very sad because maybe we could have right now some medicines for Alzheimer's and for some psychiatric problems that can be solved with this substance, but yeah, it was 70 years of no research. And so maybe in the future, because now it's a new topic and there are many groups working on that, we will have not only the explanation about this hypothesis about the development of our brains thanks to the use of psychedelic fungi, but maybe new drugs and new treatments for many brain diseases.
Yeah, it's a mad loss to medical science. It's 70 years is a very long time to be behind mm-hmm. in research of anything. In Colombia, is it then illegal, the consumption of psilocybin? Is it considered a narcotic?
Is it illegal? Like 3 months ago, we have a seminar, the YouTube link of the Colombian Mycological Association, so you can check them. And we were with some specialists, like from the legal part, psychologists, and also mycologists talking about psilocybin and the reality in Colombia. Because the problem here is that it's forbidden to use psilocybin, and of course it's prohibited to use it in medical treatments. But there are some people, because it works, it seems that it works, there are some treatments and people that are working with that, but it's out of the legality.
Perhaps an interesting distinction to make there is that many indigenous societies are up and they rely on both plants and fungi to produce hallucinations, to inform, to take, to make the most important decisions, even in their lives. And that's why those both hallucinogenous plants and fungi or fungi are many times considered sacred, while at the same time, Western societies are forbidden. You can see even the reflect on of that, not just in medicine, but also in the trace in arts and the symbolism. An interesting note, in the summer next year, we will have an exhibition here in NYBG that is called Wonderland. And it's about Lewis Carroll, Alice Adventures in Wonderland. And we will feature the role of fungi in perhaps inspiring people. So if you can come, please come and visit. Beautiful interaction between fungi, plants, and people.
Amazing.
I love it. Hieronymus Bosch, who painted the Garden of Earthly Delights, there's now a number of theories that suggest not that he was actively eating mushrooms or anything similar, but that he had something called ergot poisoning, which is a different fungus. Fascinating effect that these substances can have on the brain. So fungus also have a use as sunscreen and cosmetics. There's one in La Guajira in particular that the YU indigenous group use as a sunscreen. How does that work?
Actually, Aida can correct me, but it's at least two species of mushrooms.
Oh, wow.
That are widely used as sunscreen and makeup in ritualistic ceremonies by the YU indigenous people in Colombia.
They use a mix of spores of different species of fungus that grow in deserts. So they are very special because these systems are not with a lot of vegetation and a lot of resources for fungus, for mushrooms. They took the spores and they mixed it with oil and they used for some rituals, but also when the women used to go out to collect water or something, they use it to protect themselves from the radiation. And the color, if you can check the photos of the Wayuu women, the color is red. And this color is because the spores are having one molecule. This substance is very important because it's to protect the spores from the radiation.
Wow.
The carotenoids is the name of these molecules. So these substances, they protect and they have also antioxidants. So that's why the indigenous are using that and they are protecting themselves, their skin, and also they help the skin with these antioxidants. It's a very important cosmetic.
When I was on the Coal Fungi site, I noticed one of the uses is biomonitoring, so environmental monitoring. How do we monitor the health or degradation of ecosystems using fungi? How does that work?
Well, there's various ways, but one definitely is the lichens. So we can use the lichens because the lichens lack ways to protect themselves against the particles of pollution in the air. So by monitoring the fungi of lichens in the forest, we can have an idea about how clean the air can be. And as a matter of fact, when you go to very polluted areas, you won't see many lichens or you won't see any lichens at all. So that's one of the ways, but there are many other ways we can use fungi to help clean the environment and monitor the quality of the environment.
Yeah, now there are some species that are typical from secondary forests or to forests that they are very perturbed. So they and also others that only appear when the forests are very well developed and odd. So not only the lichens, but also with the mushrooms, some species, they can indicate the quality of the forest, at least.
Wow.
And obviously, we could use also fungi to help us in biological control. So when we have identified problems in the environment or in agriculture, there are various species that can be used to help control those pathogens affecting, for instance, the crops. So they have many more uses besides what we've been talking in terms of medicine, food, cosmetics, but also in agriculture and in the industry.
Actually, in Colombia, there are many groups, researchers that have been exploring the uses of the fungi of they are collecting the fungi and try to see if they have some antibiotic or antibacterial activity, because they are very important to produce some kind of substance like the antibiotics. So with bioprospecting, there are groups that have been focusing antibiotics and other molecules that can be very important for the food industry. So there is enormous resources that can be explored from fungi, from the fungi of Colombia.
Because penicillin itself is created from fungi.
Yeah, exactly.
So the original antibiotic. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we imagine how many species we have yet to discover and how much may be waiting for us in terms of those possibilities, I think, unfortunately, in the year 2023, we also have to talk about how many may already have been lost and how many we are currently losing. So how much of fungal life on the planet, and of course, particularly in Colombia, might be vulnerable or under threat of extinction? And what are the threats to that life?
By now, we have only evaluated around 22 species. So we know that most of these 22 species are vulnerable, but I think that most of the fungi of Colombia are now in danger because the deforestation in the country is so high, quite fast. For example, the Amazon is an area with a huge diversity of systems, and we are expecting to have also a huge diversity of fungi. And one of the focus of deforestation now is the Departamento del Guaviare. And they are like cutting the forest very, very, very fast. So I think that most of those diversity that we do not know yet is disappearing with the forest as well. And the same in the Caribbean with the dry forest. The dry forest is a ecosystem in danger. There is less than 20% of the original forest that already exists. And we don't know that much about the mushrooms that grows in this type of system. So I think that there are already many species that are extincted, and they are very in danger because there are many gaps. And those areas are also with a big deforestation processes occurring now.
Right. So deforestation and industrial farming are as much a threat to fungal life as other types of life then.
Yeah, the deforestation here is depending on the area. So in some areas it's for cattle, and others for big extension of. So it depends. But I think that we are losing our forest, and also some remains, for example, in the mountain areas, they are very degraded. That also have some implication in some kind of fungi that they need, like very pristine forest to be.
Right.
I would put the causes under the umbrella of land use change, with not just include deforestation, but in general terms, how the land use has been changed over time. Because sometimes what you have is a savanna ecosystem with grasslands that is afforested. But while doing that, you are changing the conditions and you are affecting a native species, or the same happens in the páramo ecosystems, where you start like planting trees like pinus, and you destroy the soils and you destroy the fungi. So the main threat is the land use change that the country is witnessing.
So what can we do? What's the future of not just fungal life in Colombia, but mycology as a discipline? How do we inject life into the discipline and save the fungal species of Colombia?
We have many initiatives in the country. First is to try to visibilize the fungi in different levels, in the political levels, but also for society. That is important, the society realize that fungi are important. And we are also trying to improve education about fungi at the university level. We are working in universities to improve the collections, and also trying to fill in the gaps of information if some areas that have been poorly studied. Also to study the uses of this diversity, because when the people realize that they are useful, they start to preserve it as well. And for conservation, now we are having a big group in Colombia about fungal conservation, and we are trying to advise public policies about conservation of fungi, and try to start doing red listing at the national level in order to generate information for the political makers that realize that they need fungi, also need protection. So I think we need to work very hard in different levels, society level, the academic level, but also in the political level, to try to generate more information, but also to preserve fungi in Colombia.
Yes, and I would like to highlight the importance of raising awareness in the society about the importance of fungi. So this is an invitation to everybody to really stop or reducing consumption of meat and increasing the consumption on fungi. There's lots of species that are excellent supplements or replacement to meat consumption, but also understand how important is the use of fungi in your life. Everything, even the cocoa beans require the fermentation process by fungus in order to get the flavor of the chocolate. And we eat fungus or products by fungus every single day, piece of cheese, a wine, a beer, all the food around us requires fungus to act on it. The fermentation process to get the bread, a piece of bread, fundamental in all our lives. And we need to open our eyes to their importance and to start learning about our local species, how we can use them in the best way possible in all aspects of our lives and the society.
I love it. I feel hopeful. Thank you, both of you. Those sound doable. And you're right. And I think it's a call to arms. Next time you go on a walk, it's flora, it's fauna, and it's fungi. Amazing. Thank you guys so much. This has been just so interesting.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for the invitation.
The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Columbia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website, that's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Columbia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.